Word of mouth.
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 Mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. In his 2007 memoir, A Long Way Gone, Ishmael Bea wrote about narrowly escaping a massacre in his village in Sierra Leone and his subsequent descent into depravity as a child soldier. The characters in his new novel, Radiance of Tomorrow, are making another journey back home to their scorched earth and discarded bones left behind by a long and brutal civil war. Those finding their way to the village of Imperi carry with them memories of horror, sometimes visible in amputated limbs, sometimes buried deep and silently in through them. The novel asks what happens when those whose lives have been scarred, both as victims and perpetrators, try to create a future. And Ishmael Bea is here in Concord to read at Gibson's Books. We're so grateful he could stop and speak with us beforehand. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mama Kadi, she is this character who's limping back to the village of Imperi at the beginning of the book. The scene of a massacre some 7 years before that she managed to escape. Why did she return to a place of such horror?
Well, one of the questions I wanted to ask is in this book is that what is the idea of home? Regardless of what had happened, people had this nostalgia to return to where their home had been. And so they're coming hoping that they would go back to their lives. And if not, to recreate something sort of equal to what their lives had been. So Mama Kadi is actually returning. She's asking herself those very same questions, you know, because all through her journey, running from the war, becoming internal refugee in her country, she's not satisfied wherever she is.
She said she couldn't be happy anywhere else.
Exactly. She couldn't be happy anywhere else because really home is only where her spirit would rest. So she decided to make the journey, and so all the people in the narrative who decide to go back home to find a place where their spirit can rest, even though this is also where their spirit had been shattered to some extent.
And when she gets there, she comes upon an old friend, Pa Moiwa?
Yes.
Pa Moiwa, who's afraid to look at her. Why?
Well, one of the things I wanted to discuss in this novel is that often when wars end, I don't think people really look at the difficulties of trying to return and what that means. Because the ways things have been done have changed. There's a new kind of hesitancy. And one of those is that when you hear somebody who you've heard, you know from before, you didn't want to turn around and look at them because during the war people were amputated, whether it could be hands, limbs, mouths, ears, and things like that. So when you look at somebody, you began to literally do a roll call on their body parts to see, is this there, is this there, are you functioning, you know. So when they had this encounter, he was looking to see. Because if somebody was close to you, whatever had happened to them, you're going to take on some of that burden yourself.
So he's afraid he's going to see this wreckage. And many of all of the characters carry a vestige of the war with them. There's a little bit of suspiciousness of each other. One of the characters you write about says they have adopted the reflex of not believing in kindness. Is this a legacy?
Yes, this is definitely something that comes out of the war because before the war, Sierra Leone was a very kind place. You walk down a path 6-7 miles, people would take care of you, they would feed you, nothing. During the war, kindness itself could cause you a lot of harm. So when you hadn't seen anybody during the war for a week or two and you saw them, you didn't know what to say to them because you didn't know whether they were a spy for one group or the other, and it could cost you your life. So after the war ended, people had to relearn how to change those reflexes. Mm. Even encountering a young boy on a path, a young man with a machete on a path, had become there's another connotation now added to it. Whereas before, you did not flinch when you encountered him. You just say, hey, hello, so where are you going to the farm, you know? Also, in addition to how you greeted people, people did not greet each other elaborately any longer because they feared asking those questions about how are you, how is your son, your grandson. Nobody knew who you had lost.
Well, you returned. You went back to your home, and now you're a UNICEF ambassador, an advocate for children affected by war. But there are characters in the novel who are reluctant to tell their children who were not alive or not aware of what happened during the war. How do you spread this awareness? How do you let people know what happened without reawakening the trauma?
Well, that is a difficult question, and also is what is posed in this narrative, is that for some people, their method of recovering, their way of recovering is not to speak about the past. And sometimes they just don't know how to explain to the younger generation really what had happened.
They're the children of Bokhari, I think is his name. They ask, why do Sila and his sons have no hands? What does he tell them?
The point that I was trying to make is that also in post-war context, what happens is that there are people who are born at the very end of the war, who do not have any recollection of what has happened. And now it becomes the task of the community and their parents to decide whether they want to tell them.
So some of those stories are kind of concealed from children, but we also get this sense of the storytelling tradition from Makadi and the elders. And beautiful examples of the Mende language. You are Mende?
I am Mende, yes.
So give us some examples of how this language, I mean, it must be so interesting for you to kind of be translating it into continental English or Pidgin at the same time.
Yes, well, for me, the storytelling in the book is also a way to begin to repair some of the broken bonds, you know. And I grew up in a a context where we think of story as medicine.
Do they actually call it that? They call it medicine?
Yes, story is medicine. When I was a kid, my grandmother would tell me stories are medicine, and each evening would tell you one to prepare you, to kind of give you the antidotes that you need. And later on in your life, you will know why some of these stories would make sense to you. And when I was a boy, I thought, well, can you just tell me why it means to me? And my grandmother would say, no. But going back to your earlier question with the language, you know, when I'm writing, you know, I speak some languages in Sierra Leone, in particular Mende, which is my mother tongue. I'm always thinking in that language because all of the characters are set in Sierra Leone, in that landscape. And I, as a writer, I believe that language has to fit landscape. So I think of the story in Mende, and then I try to find the English equivalent of them. So I'm doing translations as I'm writing as well. And some translations are direct, and they're beautiful, and some I have to work for in terms of finding the mannerisms of people or finding certain images that will have people feel a certain way that I want them to feel.
Well, because the sky is a character, the ground is
exactly
a character, the trees are characters.
Yes, because, you know, we believe in the natural world has a life of its own. So when I write, you see that the natural world, the trees, the sky, the breeze itself, the path, they are not just bystanders or onlookers. They are part. They are characters in the narrative, you know. And you know, for example, when this "The Radiance of Tomorrow" the novel opens, Mama Kadi is walking on the path, and I talk about how the warmth of the bare feet will give life to the road. And if you've been in a small village, you see that when people walk on a path, it's kind of the grass doesn't grow there. It grows everywhere else closer, but it won't grow there, you know. And in a way, it's not me trying to be flowery. This is how people speak.
We're speaking with Ishmael Bea. His new novel is called Radiance of Tomorrow, and he's with us to talk about going back to a village in Sierra Leone and what the meaning of home is for people who have suffered tremendously during this war. Millions of people displaced, 50 to 70,000 people killed. And there are characters like the Colonel, a hardened face, young, but the face that's sort of embittered by life, and he returns with a couple of men, young boys who are obedient to him. So we guess that he's a former child soldier, the experience that you had. And he becomes a kind of sentry for this village, but still has this hair trigger. And I'm wondering about your experience, you know, after the experience that you had of, you know, being drugged out and carrying an AK-47 or being seized upon people. Do you have this hair trigger? How did you get rid of it?
Well, for Colonel in this narrative, it's not necessarily hair triggered. I was trying to, Colonel was a very difficult character to write because of trying to walk a fine line between showing a character that, because of their experiences of being in the war, has learned that you must never allow anybody to trample on your dignity or on your humanity. Mm. And so he's using techniques he's learned from something that's not so good to protect the dignity of his community and himself. So I had to walk that fine line by saying that without endorsing violence as an alternative to maintaining one's dignity. Mm-hmm. So that was really what that is. And that strength for me, and the point I'm trying to make here is not necessarily about a hair trigger, which I have in me as well, is that when you come out of such an experience, oftentimes people think that everything you've learned was negative or bad, so you must be cleansed of it. But rather, I really think about it the other way, that you can refocus some of the things that you learn in a war, because what the fact that you survived required a remarkable intelligence and also a strength in your character in some way. So he had a sense of leadership. For example, he's looking after all these young people who have become sort of family and his responsibility. And he sees injustice in ways that some people may brush it off, but he knows when you let go one small injustice, it just becomes another and another. And so he has this kind of character that is sort of, can do what he wants and would not allow anybody to dictate how he lives his life.
That's a very optimistic view, Ishmael, that that not everything you learn in a war is bad. We often don't think about that. You know, we think of the emotional burden rather than the lessons.
Yes. I mean, of course, there is a difficulty and emotional burden, but there are things that can be refocused. You know, for example, you know, during the war for me, you know, being a soldier, any soldier, and child soldier also, is that you learn discipline. You can sit somewhere and they tell you, guard this post, and you do it with your life. Now, if you use that same discipline to study, which is what I did when I was in school, I would sit somewhere and say, I wouldn't leave until I read this book. Even if my legs are falling asleep, I know how to do that. I can sit there. I had insomnia when I came out of the war, and most people say, you should see a doctor. You know, when I was in university, I had my insomnia was very strong. I could sleep 2 hours a night if I could, you know. And everybody was thought I was bad. And I thought to myself, well, what young person would not want to have insomnia when you're in university, you know. Mm-hmm. So I was up. I did all my work. I did my readings. I went to a party. I came back. I did more reading, you know. So I refocused and used some things to my advantage. You know, if I went in a given day and I only had, you know, a small amount of food to eat and some water, it did not throw off my day because I've gone longer being hungry. Mm. So some of these things are strengths, but oftentimes we just look at them as burdens and they become only that.
The people who return and make their way to Imperi kind of create a community, a bustling community. But life creeps back in. We have a corrupt principal getting paid for more teachers than are actually on the books. The government declares the kids have to wear uniforms to school, which discounts some of them. They can't afford them. And the government also sells out a 99-year lease to this mining company. It's almost like another invasion. Tell me about that literary device of this mining company always grinding through.
What I was going to look at is that, okay, people return and they begin to put their lives back together, but they have to find opportunity in order to take care of themselves and their families. And then, of course, here comes a mining company. And the point I was trying to look at also was that, you know, in post-war settings, often most companies would not go to invest in countries because they're worried about security reasons. So the ones that you have coming are the ones who don't have the right human right records. Mm-hmm. So they're coming knowing that they're going to get what they want because they're the only people there. And, of course, they don't care. They want to extract at the expense of other people's lives. So they will start doing that. Mm-hmm. And even the community is split on that because they see it as opportunity.
Right. But the kids drop out of school and they go to work for the mining company.
And they think, well, should this opportunity destroy our traditions and our lives in the pursuit of that? So you have this push and pull that's there. And lastly, the point that's really important, this new invasion is even worse than the war because in the sense that during the war, when you ran away from home, you knew you always come back to that place. But the way this mining company is going about extracting the natural resources, they're destroying the physicality of that land itself. So, and home means different things to people. So you will never be able to come back to where your ancestors are buried because you'll be flooded and other things would happen to it. You know, so there is a different kind of war they have to face in a way.
Mm. And some of them do flee.
Yes.
Trying a couple other towns, but eventually ending up in Freetown, the capital. Mm. It feels like a really chaotic place. Do you feel hopeful about that?
Yes, it is a chaotic place. I feel hopeful about it. I think what I'm trying to say is to really show the different parts of the country and what's happening in post-war. As a country itself, it's learning to find its identity again, you know. And so that you see that being shown in the characters, what they embrace now, what they look for in people, what they look for to determine somebody's good character has changed, you know. And all the young people, the population has changed. So most people are now in the capital city looking for opportunities. But there are too many of them to find the opportunity. For me, I think it's a hopeful ending because at the end of it, they are still there and they hope that tomorrow would be different, right?
There's a radiance of tomorrow.
Exactly, because tomorrow hasn't arrived yet, so the possibilities are there. Because in the context that I come from, it's not a la-la-la ending and go prancing in the sunlight for most people. But the end of the day, you know, if you've been to a place like Sierra Leone in Freetown, people will struggle all throughout the day. But in the evening, you would not know who is a struggling man and who is a rich person. Everybody will come out and celebrate life like there's no tomorrow. And they will start all over again. And that's the strength, you know.
Well, Ishmael Beya, what a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Ishmael Beya, putting some meat and muscle on the skeleton of Sierra Leone. His new novel is called Radiance of Tomorrow. He is also author of the New York Times best-selling memoir, A Long Way Home. It's a book about his life as a child soldier fighting in Sierra Leone's civil war. You'll find much more on the book at wordofmouthradio.org.
You left your country to seek refuge in another man's land.
There's more Word of Mouth coming right after the break. Please stay with us.